How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 53 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head on to iTunes, and you can search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review once you're there as well. Find us on audioboom.com, too. I'm on every day of the week now, Monday through Friday. If you've been listening to the podcast the last couple of weeks, you'll know no more Tuesday, Thursday. It's on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Every day of the week I'm on, so we've got a fresh week coming up, and it's going to be a good one. We've got real basketball. We've got the Thunder playing an actual basketball team Monday afternoon. It's going to be fun. I'm going to preview that right now. And then we're going to be talking some over-unders like I wanted to do last week. Going to be doing Eastern Conference over-unders in just a little bit. And today's going to be a longer episode because of that. Tomorrow is like that too. The Thunder game is scheduled for 1:30 p.m. Central Time. That's against Real Madrid in Madrid. So you got the time difference. They're playing the evening game, but it's 1:30 for us. If you're just here for the latter part, if you're just here for the over-unders, that's cool. You can stick around for a few minutes, or you can just put your finger a little bit further on the screen and move it along and get to the over-unders if you can't stand just me talking about the Thunder for a little bit. But I'm going to be welcoming in Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball for that over-under podcast, and we're talking Eastern Conference today. Tomorrow is going to be all the Western Conference teams, so obviously that means the Thunder are going to be for the Tuesday morning podcast. Today, just the East, like I said before, we went super long, not possible for a podcast. If you're looking at this, you already know we went over an hour just on the East. So we got some great talk, great basketball. It's just a good basketball podcast. No, it's not a Thunder. It's not a Thunder segment of the podcast, but it's just a good basketball podcast, and I think that'll be a fun listen. Let's talk about the game a little bit, though. So the Thunder play Real Madrid, 1:30 Central Time is the scheduled start. It's on NBA TV, so you can watch it if you're home for whatever reason in the middle of the day on a Monday. You can watch it if you're not at work or if you're not at school or if you don't already have plans. You will be able to watch it as long as you got NBA TV. Or if you have other means to watch, you can do that too. I just want to get some talking points, basically, through the game. It's hard to preview it because they're playing Real Madrid, who is a team that has turnover because they're starting a season of their own, and a team who, is not an NBA team. So it's not as much game analysis as much as this is just kind of Thunder analysis. So I'm just going to go through some talking points. On my pregame column, which I have up on normantranscript.com, on my blog at Thunder Road, which is just under the sports tab on the site, just go to the drop-down menu under sports and click Thunder Road, and you're going to find it right there on normantranscript.com. But I have that one. I just refer to it as pregame tapas. They're playing in Spain. Why not? It's pregame tapas. Just some talking points, things to look out for in the game, basically. First up, the starting lineup. It's super simple, but we don't know for sure who's going to start. My guess is that Ersan Ilyasova is going to start at power forward. We know it's going to be Russell Westbrook. I think we can make the educated guess that Westbrook is going to be joined by Steven Adams, Andre Robertson, and Victor Oladipo. And the power forward spot is really where we're not 100% sure. We saw Domantas Sabonis play with the projected starters, or we shouldn't even call them the projected starters, more the anticipated starters, during the blue and white scrimmage last Tuesday. Billy Donovan talked a little bit about how that might be more, or at least as much, about just giving him some confidence as it is about what actually fits on the basketball court. I think it's probably going to be Ersan Ilyasova. He just fits with his shooting. I've talked about that a lot. You can just go to my preseason preview podcast on the Big Men to hear more analysis on that. I don't need to rehash all of that here. But, you know, for all we know, we get surprised with Sabonis, or we get surprised with LaVerne, or we get surprised with Kanter starting at the four. And that's just something to look out for. It's going to be the first time we have actual evidence and not just us thinking, all right, what makes sense? What do we think is probably going to be it? We will have actual evidence over what Billy Donovan wants to do with a starting lineup. And yeah, it's the preseason, and that's kind of when you experiment and you do whatever. So it doesn't necessarily mean the starting lineup for game one of the preseason is the starting lineup at any point in the regular season, let alone to start the regular season. But it gives us something, at least. It gives us something. Second, how involved is Steven Adams? I'm really fascinated to see how Steven Adams, how involved he's going to be on the offensive end. I mean, there are a lot more touches to go around with Kevin Durant gone, with Deion Waiters gone, with Serge Ibaka gone, and a lot of them are going to go to Victor Oladipo. But some of those are going to go to Steven Adams, and I don't think he's just going to be posting up like crazy. That's not the type of player he is, but he's going to be a receiver on a lot more pick and rolls, I think. I think he's going to be more active setting ball screens. I think he might get a couple more post touches a game, one or two more. Hey, he's not going to happen five times a game or anything like that, but it could happen every once in a while within the flow of an offense. They get a mismatch, anything like that. I think these are all plausibilities. I think he's also going to have some responsibilities, and Billy Donovan's talked about this, creating and that kind of stuff. And that's just something to look out for. How much more involved? We know Adams is going to be more involved in the offense, but how much more involved is he going to be in the offense right out of the gate? And that's something he's going to have to get more comfortable with, because he's never had a role where he's been as involved as we expect him to be involved with the offense this year. And it's something that'll probably grow throughout the year. He'll probably start off a little bit less, and they'll start giving him more and more responsibilities throughout the season, because he's going to have to get more comfortable. And this is going to start right away. This is going to start at his lowest starting point, right? He's going to have to build from there. So whatever happens on Monday doesn't necessarily mean that's what happens the rest of the season. In any of these scenarios, it's game one of the preseason. It's not even game one of the regular season, which honestly doesn't mean much in projecting out the rest of the regular year. So I'm excited to see what Adams is going to do, just to see what his role is going to be like. The third thing is I want to see just what style the Thunder are playing. Offensively, I mean, when they lost Durant and they lost Ibaka, they didn't just lose quality. They lost identity. They lost their DNA. They lost a lot of what made up those Thunder teams that we've seen for the last 6, 7, 8 years. They lost so much of that. And now we're going to see them change their styles. We're going to see them change their designs on both sides of the floor. They're going to, I want to see what kind of offense they're running from a schematic standpoint. I want to see how they're going to try to spread the floor without as many shooters as they've had in the past. And they didn't have a ton of shooters last year to begin with. I want to see how they're going to try to create spacing. I want to see how they're going to try to create movement in the opposing defense. I want to see on defense what kind of schemes they're playing. They say they want to play faster. I want to see how they're going to try to execute that in the defensive end. How are you going to force bad shots? How are you going to force live ball turnovers? What are they going to do in order to create those scenarios? That's going to be really interesting to follow. And those are things that I'm 100% going to be writing on at some point this week. I'm going to be writing reaction pieces to both what we saw from the Thunder offense and what we saw from the Thunder defense, just from a schematic point. I'm going to be writing that, if not after the first game, then certainly after the second one. And at least going to have tidbits in there and reaction articles after the first game. No question about that. I also want to know who's going to be running the second unit offense. Cameron Payne, we learned, broke his foot last week during that blue and white scrimmage last Tuesday. So who's running the second unit offense? We know Ronnie Price is going to get backup point guard minutes, and he's going to be guarding opposing point guards. But is he going to run the offense? Is Billy Donovan going to stagger Victor Oladipo and Russell Westbrook so that Victor Oladipo is on the floor at all times, that Ronnie Price is on the floor, which means that Ronnie Price is really playing more of an off-ball role offensively? It's possible. And to me, it seems likely until Cameron Payne comes back. That seems like a legitimate scenario. I wonder if Donovan's going to do it. I wonder if he's going to see what he has in Ronnie Price at the start. See maybe if he can figure out a way to get Ronnie Price at least competently running the offense so that he can maximize Oladipo and Westbrook playing together. And remember, Billy Donovan adjusted a lot in the playoffs last year. He adjusted schemes throughout the season. They changed their pick and roll coverage midway through the year. Like, there were a lot of changes on this Thunder team last year. So this is not, there's absolutely nothing that we're going to see tomorrow, which is all of a sudden embedded in the team, even through the end of the preseason, let alone through part of the regular season. But it's a nice start. It's a nice way to see what they have and what they think they have and what they're running and what they're trying to run and what they're trying to do and all that fun stuff. And it's basketball season, baby. I'm excited for it. I'm really excited. I'm so excited for it that I am calling my generic listener baby. And I never call anyone baby. And that should really show. That should really show the excitement. If you're not watching, because like I said, you have prior engagement, like, oh, I don't know, work in the middle of a day on Monday, or you have school, or you just aren't going to watch a random preseason game, which is pretty respectable too. Or if you just have, you have a real life, unlike me, who will be sitting down watching this game. Just follow me on Twitter, at Fred Katz, F-R-E-D-K-A-T-Z. I'll be tweeting out Vines, updates of the game, you know, reaction, analysis, all that stuff. You can also find immediate reaction and wrap-up stuff at normantranscript.com. Like I said before, just head to Thunder Road, my blog. Under the drop-down menu, drag over sports. Click on Thunder Road on normantranscript.com, and you'll see it all right there. Let me take a breather, and then it's going to be over-under time. Eastern Conference with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So let's welcome to the show Locked On Fantasy Basketball host Josh Lloyd. You ready for some over-unders?
I'm ready, Fred. I'm ready to go.
All right. Let's do it then. So basically, for those who don't know, if you're not degenerate gamblers or you're just not around the Vegas lines or whatever it is, over-unders, very simple concept. Las Vegas or, you know, whatever betting site or whatever it is sets NBA lines, and they do this for every sport before the season. They set lines to predict how many games each team is going to win, and then you can set a bet either over or under that number. So, for example, the Atlanta Hawks are set at 43.5 wins. You can bet the over, which means that you think they're going to win over 43.5 games. You can bet the under, which means you think they're going to win 43 or fewer games. And that's kind of how these over-under lines work. So Josh and I are going to go through each team. We're going to do two podcasts. Today is the Eastern Conference. Tomorrow we're going to be doing the Western Conference. So we'll get into a lot of Thunder talk on that one, obviously. Today not as much. You got your monologue, and that was pretty much it for Thunder talk. But Josh, you ready to go?
Let's get stuck into it, Fred.
All right. And just to let you know, let you and whoever is crazy enough to be listening to my voice on this to know, I'm not sure if Bovada has released its official lines yet. That's usually what I go to for this stuff, Bovada. This one's off another site. I know it's off sportsbook.ag, so I just thought we should credit them because sometimes lines across different sources differ by, you know, maybe a half a win or something like that. And I just wanted to put that out there. All right, so
I had just a look at Bovada a couple of minutes ago, and they weren't up there yet, so we're still good to go in that sense.
All right, well, we got numbers. That's all we really care about, right?
Yep.
All right, so Atlanta Hawks, first one. I told you that. We're just going alphabetical order here, alphabetical by city. So Atlanta Hawks, told you already, 43.5 wins. For reference, they won 48 wins last year. They were the number four seed in the Eastern Conference. Josh, what do you got them?
Well, before we did this podcast, I went through it and did my win. I did my win projections for these teams a couple of weeks ago, and Atlanta's comes out at 43.5, and my projection comes out at 44. So it's a really, really soft over. Look, there's a chance I think that they could equal what they did last season, but they did lose a lot of talent. Obviously, you know, Schroeder replacing Teague could be an upgrade, but most likely is a downgrade, especially with efficiency stuff. Horford to Howard, it's a change in what they do offensively, defensively. It might make them better, but who knows how it all meshes. So I've got them dropping a little bit, and yeah, a real soft over at 44.
Yeah, I actually had the exact same strategy as you. I think you need to go through, if you're going to do all of these, and just put in over-unders, put in your win totals without even looking at the over-under numbers first. Yep. And then you go through it and just make sure they add up to 1,230, which is exactly how many wins you have throughout an NBA season. I had the Hawks as an over two. I had them at 45 wins. So, yeah, I mean, I think if I had to make five bets, this wouldn't be one of the bets that I would make. But 45, 46, I think they're going to be better than a 43 win team. Like, because
oh, I do too.
I mean, people, I think a lot of them jumping down to 43 has to do with people not liking Dwight Howard. I think it's a reputation.
Mate, it's a major part of it, I reckon. It is hugely to do with Howard. They think that Howard is finished, that he's not the same guy, but that doesn't equal him being terrible. It doesn't make him trash. Like, he's still really good defensively. He's still a good rebounder. He can still do stuff. It's different to what Horford does, definitely, but he's still really good. And a lot of it gets down to the reputation that the Rockets had as a whole last season, and that reflects on him. Harden's reputation reflects on him as well, and I think he's not as bad as what people think he is.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people ask, how is Dwight Howard going to fit into Mike Budenholzer's system? And I do think that's a reasonable question, offensively, of course. And I do think that's a reasonable question, but at the same time, I'm not 100% sold that Mike Budenholzer is the type of coach that has one system and guys have to fit into it. I think that's just what we've seen because it fit the personnel the Hawks have had. The Hawks have had a pretty similar roster. There's been some turnover, Damari Carroll left, and we've seen some turnover, but for the most part, they've had a pretty similar core under Budenholzer, and they've played a way that's fit that core well. I think Budenholzer's really bright. I think he's really smart. He's a Popovich guy. He knows how important adjusting styles is. He adjusted styles a million times under Popovich. They went from a back-to-the-basket team to a ball movement team, and he was there for that entire transition. I think he knows the importance of switching schemes. And something else that Dwight Howard, I don't think Dwight Howard is as good as Al Horford, and I don't think they're going to win 48. I don't think they're going to be as good as last year, but something that Dwight Howard does make them better at that they weren't good at all last year, partly because of scheme, but they weren't a good rebounding team at all last year. And Dwight Howard's a really good rebounder. He's still a solid offensive rebounder. He's a very good defensive rebounder. And the Hawks, now, part of the reason they don't get a lot of offensive rebounds is strategy, but they're going to be a better rebounding team this year. That's something that's going to help them a lot. And I think they're going to be like a solid bottom four playoff team.
Yep, I completely agree.
All right, move on.
Yep.
Boston Celtics. Their over-under is 52. They won 48 last year. They were one of four teams that won 48 in the East. They were the number five seed. What do you got?
I think that's an over as well. I think that they project to have they had a tremendous defense last season. I think they project to potentially be even better, especially with some consistency in the front court. They were never real consistent with what they did with Sullinger and Linick and Amir Johnson, Jonas Jerebko there last season. We know that Horford's going to be there. We talked about him already with Atlanta. He's an upgrade over all those guys. You're going to plug him in for 30-plus minutes a night. You rely upon him to do stuff offensively, but he's also a really good defender. He's not a great rim protector, but he's probably as good as anyone they had there last season, and still is able to provide a huge amount of impact for them. I think Marcus Smart takes a big leap up. Yes, Evan Turner's a loss, but Smart moves into that role. Terry Rozier had looked he's taken a huge step this season, and Jaylen Brown comes in. Isaiah Thomas with an extra pick and pop partner with Horford. I think that they can. I think they go better than last season. And I think I've got them at the over at not hugely, but I've got them at 53 for next season.
I have them at the same thing. I'm taking the over too. I think this team has a really legitimate chance to be the number one ranked defense in the league.
Yep. Right?
They really do with the addition of Horford, who's just a smart anchor. They don't have a ton of rim protection, which I think is something if they don't get there, that could hurt them in the way of getting there. I mean, no matter what, this team is going to be really good defensively because, I mean, I guess the best rim protector on the team is Amir Johnson, who is good at it. He's very good at it, but he's not, the guy who you expect to see behind the number one ranked defense in the league. But there's so many strong perimeter defenders on this team. I mean, Bradley is as good as it comes on the perimeter. Smart is great on the perimeter. Crowder is very good and guards many different positions. Bradley can guard two or three. Smart can guard two positions. Like, we saw Marcus Smart guarding Kristaps Porzingis at one point last year. Like, and that was not, like, on a switch. Like, they put Marcus Smart on Kristaps Porzingis for, like, a four-minute stretch in a game last year. Like, they're... This team has a lot of versatile defenders. It'll be able to switch a ton with Al Horford there in the back now, who's really smart at calling out defensive signals and just blowing up pick and rolls. Isaiah Thomas, because he's small, has a reputation for being a really bad defender, but I don't think he is a really bad. I mean, he's not an all-defense defender, but I think he's an acceptable defender. He plays really hard. He's pretty pesky. He gets around screens okay. He's not, like, long, so he doesn't get in your face or anything, but he's pretty solid. I think this team is just going to be so good defensively that as long as it's in the top half of the league on offense, it's going to win 50.
Well, last season, their offense was poor. They were right down the bottom in 3-point attempts and right down the bottom in 3-point percentage as well. So if they get that up, which is, Horford's going to be a huge part of that, given what he does offensively, given, you know, the offensive threat, his ability to space, to hit, you know, mid-range twos, to hit threes now as well, his passing ability, that all increases the offense. The defense doesn't take a step back. And what you're talking about with their rim protection is that they didn't necessarily need a rim protector last season to be as good as they were, because the threat that they put on the perimeter, the tenacity, the attack that they put on means that people aren't getting clean looks or clean lanes to get to the rim to get easy shots. So the need for a rim protector was not as high because people weren't actually getting past the guys on the perimeter to get in there and get a close-up shot. So if they continue to do that, which there's no reason they won't because these defenders are tremendous, then people aren't going to get to the rim easily at all, so there's not going to be opportunities to necessarily need to even protect the rim in that sense. So it's not like they'd love it, of course, but it doesn't preclude them from having a number one defense, not having a upper echelon rim protector.
All right, Brooklyn Nets, 21.5 wins. They won 21 last year. Things are always bleak there in Brooklyn. I am a former Brooklyn Nets reporter. I got out to Oklahoma City. What are you thinking for the Nets?
Looking at it now, I said I did this a week or so ago. I'm probably a little bit harsh on the Nets. I've got them significantly under. I've got them at 13 wins, but I reckon that's probably a bit low when I look back on it now. But I don't think they cracked 20, so I take the under regardless.
13 is aggressive. That is
bad. It's pretty low. Yeah. And now think about it, Jeremy Lin, Brooke Lopez can probably lift them to more than that himself, but really there's not a huge amount else apart from those two guys.
No, I mean there's certainly not. I mean I think I have them on the under too. 13 is extreme. I have them with the under because I think there's a distinct possibility that they trade Brooke Lopez this year.
Yep.
He's on a pretty reasonable contract. If he's healthy throughout the entire, he's making $20 million a year right now, which in this environment, Brook Lopez is really good. Like, Brook Lopez, because the Nets are so bad, has become underrated. Brook Lopez is a top five guy in terms of just scoring around, under and around the basket. He's got tremendous touch. He's a great free throw shooter. Like, he can shoot and pick and pop. Like, He is a tremendously skilled, he's a wonderful, wonderful offensive player. Like really, really fantastic. And you can kill him in the pick and roll because he's not incredibly mobile, but he's huge. So, and he's insanely long. So he's actually not a terrible rim protector. Like he'll block some shots. He'll alter some other ones. He can be effective in some senses. And so like, I think that I don't know if he will get traded, but if he's healthy again this year, that'll make basically 3 years in a row where he's been healthy, had those foot issues before. And if they trade Brook Lopez, they're going to want to get back some mix up, draft picks, young players, you know, whatever you want to, something that'll help him in the future instead of this year. And if that's the case and you just got Jeremy Lin as your best player, like that team's not winning 22 games. I picked the under based on the prediction that Brook Lopez will be on another team by the end of this year. And if they do want to trade Brook Lopez, I feel like this could be the year. Like, Brook Lopez is going to have some value, I imagine. Like, Brook Lopez, especially since if he's healthy this year, it'll make a third consecutive year in which he's been healthy and he's still pretty young and he's got 2 years of team control left. It's not like he's a free agent next year either.
Yeah, exactly. He is underrated because he plays on this team because once something sticks with a player, you're injury prone. Okay, look, he's had two full healthy seasons, so we don't look. Maybe something happens with his foot again, but everything that we've heard about the surgery is that it does provide a permanent fix to the foot. So, but that sticks with him. Oh, he's a really poor defender. Well, he's not that bad. He's a really poor rebounder. Actually, he's improved his rebounding a lot over the last couple of seasons, and he's a tremendous box-out guy as well. So a lot of these things stick with people, and they think, oh, yeah, what's Brook Lopez? He's terrible. The team's terrible. No, not really. Look, he is one of the top offensive centers in the game, and he can provide a lot for teams. But yeah, there is obviously defense. We're not talking canter levels of defensive concerns, but what he does offensively is really, really good. And again, I think I'm probably being a little bit harsh there on the 13 wins, but I still think that they do go under, because I reckon it is a big possibility that he moves on this season. We saw they had no issue with moving on from Thad Young in the offseason.
Brook Lopez also one of my favorite people that I've ever gotten to cover.
Yeah, seems like a really funny guy, actually.
He is an incredibly funny guy, and he is a super nice guy. He's just a really good dude. He doesn't like talking about basketball. He's got other interests. When you just talk to him, he's got other interests he likes more than basketball. He's a really, really easy guy to cover, though. He's very bright, and he's very funny and just really approachable guy. Let's do the Hornets. I was surprised. I was honestly really surprised by the Hornets number. They won 48 last year. They were the sixth seed, but four teams in the East won the sixth seed. They could have been the three if tiebreaker scenarios had worked out differently. This was a really good team. They were 48 wins last year. Their over-under came in at 40.5. Now, I thought that they were going to win fewer than 48 this year, but I'm still going with the over. What do you think?
Yeah, to me, this is you talked about, you know, top five bets before. This is a top five to me. I've got it comfortly as an over. I can't see how they're dropping eight games. Yeah, look, Lynn is a loss. I don't think Jefferson is that big of a loss, to be honest. Like, he didn't play a huge amount last season. When he did play, it seemed to me that the game had almost passed him by, or especially the style the Hornets had played had passed him by. Plus, they get Michael Kidd-Gilchrist back. And we've seen what he can do when he plays in this team, and how good the team looks when he actually plays, whether he can translate that, you know, short stretch of 3-point shooting last season into a full year's of production, worth of production. I don't know, but he's an upgrade on Courtney Lee defensively. Now, Lee was a really good defender, but Kidd-Gilchrist is better. And look, they did suffer some losses, but I think that it's not eight games worth of losses. And Steve Clifford is one of the best coaches in the NBA. He's shown that whatever the team has got, he can adjust to, which he did last season. And I cannot understand for the life of me why it's down that low.
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is an all-NBA caliber defender if he's healthy. Yep. He is that good of a perimeter defender. If Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is healthy, and he's still young, like, he can easily get better. He's still like 23 years old, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, 24 years old. He's really young. If he is healthy, which he wasn't last year, he had the rotator cuff issues. But if he is, you can make an argument he is the best perimeter defender in the entire league. He can make, I guess, this side of Kawhi Leonard, I'll say. I don't think you can make the argument he's better than Kawhi. But you can make the argument he's the best one in the Eastern Conference. He can make a defense really, really on his own. And last year, this was a team that defended pretty well. I don't think they're going to win 48, because I'm not 100% certain that Kemba Walker is going to replicate the season he had last year. I'm not 100% sure that Batum is going to have the year that he had last year, which was probably the best year of his career. And I'm not sure that he's, you know, just replicate that or continue growing from there, especially because he did that in a contract year. That being said, I'm with you. Al Jefferson was not that important to this team last year. They played better when they spread the floor. This team finished in the top five in the league in three-point attempts. They don't have Courtney Lee, and Kidd-Gilchrist will scrunch the floor a little bit more, which is partly why I thought they were going to win fewer than 48. And I was looking forward to this to bet the under, honestly, because I was like, oh, they'll come out. You know, they were this up-and-coming team last year, and they won 48. Their over-under is going to be like 47, and then I see it at 40.5. And I was like, damn, I got to go over it. Like, I have to go over on this one. And I had them at a win total in the mid-40s, and I think they're gonna be somewhere around there.
Kidd-Gilchrist has had a positive on-off number each year of his career. Now, last season, he only played 200 minutes, but he was plus 13.6. But the year before that, he was plus 12.2 on-off, which is just a ridiculous number for a guy to have that sort of an impact. You know, we've seen what Clifford's done in rehabilitating guys who have had poor seasons, especially guys coming from the Lakers, like Lynn. Hibbert comes across. He provides rim protection for this team. Marco Bellinelli comes from a trash situation that he was in Sacramento. Do they rehabilitate him and turn him into a decent bench piece? And, the Sessions Bellinelli combo, how does that replace Lynn? I can't see how it drops eight wins. I've got him at mid-40s. I've got him at 46. I think it's a pretty comfortable over to me.
Yeah, and I'm with you. Steve Clifford is a wonderful coach. He's a great coach. He's a really great coach.
Yeah, look, he should always be up there in that. He was last season in those Coach of the Year discussions. He should be always right up there.
Yeah, he's great. Chicago Bulls. Their over-under is 40. They won 42 last year. They had a weird offseason, and this team is going to be weird, and this offense is going to be weird. They got Rondo. They got Wade. They won 42 last year. They got Rondo. They got Wade, and I think they're going to be worse. I have them under 40 wins. What do you have?
Well, I have been fairly critical of what they've done this offseason, but I was more critical in terms of what it means long term for the team as well. But I think there's a chance that they become worse as a team, but actually maybe get themselves a couple of extra or an extra win over last season. I've got them at over just, but it could blow up horribly, and they could finish it at 35 wins. But I do have them barely at the over, despite really hating what they did as a team. Just a few extra things going their way. If Mirotić doesn't miss 15-20 games due to botched appendicitis surgery last season, they probably win an extra four games last year, and I think that might end up being worse than that. But assuming that sort of horrible luck/management doesn't go wrong, then I think that they can, much to not my disappointment, because I'm a Bulls fan, Fred, but more to my thought process of it not justifying the moves they made. I think they actually do get over the 40 wins, but who knows? It could be. I'd be watching anyway, but it's got disaster potential.
Yeah, that's the word I was going to use. The offense could totally collapse. The offense really could completely collapse. I can't figure out how Butler, Wade, and Rondo, and I know I'm hardly the first person to say this, are all going to work together. They all like to handle the ball. None of them is a particularly great shooter. Although Jimmy Butler's three-point numbers, they get good one year, bad next year, good one year, bad the next year. And I think this is the year where it's supposed to be good again. So we'll see if Jimmy Butler continues that trend. And if he can shoot well this year, because we've seen him as a good shooter and as an inaccurate one. If he can shoot, that'll obviously help them a lot, because I think they're going to have some cramped spacing. But yeah, I mean, I think the offense is going to drag them down. It's going to be in the bottom half of the league, I think. I don't think the defense is – I think, we're not going to see Wade play a full season. I don't think the defense is going to hold up. Rondo was such a disaster on the defensive end last year in Sacramento, and he's deteriorated defensively each year over the last, four, basically. I don't see why that would change in Chicago, and they don't have really the backline defenders. I mean, Butler's a wonderful defender, but they don't really have, I think, the backline defenders. Mirotić is not going to recover when guys blow by Wade or guys blow by Rondo. And I don't think that's going to work particularly well either. I think they're going to win something, and I don't think they're going to win 20-something games. I think they're going to win something in the mid-30s, but that'll put them below 40 wins.
It's, okay. It's a lot of what their season is, it's going to hinge on guys like Mirotić, on Bobby Portis developing a three-point shot, on Denzel Valentine transitioning, and on Doug McDermott providing anything. Like, his shooting's going to be there, but he has to provide something else. He has to be able to rebound. He has to be able to defend. He has to be able to pass. And these are all bench guys, with the exception of Mirotić most likely. But if those guys don't develop a shot like Portis, if Valentine can't hit his shots or defend in the NBA, then they're going to be in a lot of trouble. But if those guys can actually provide above average or above what we expect them to do, then that really does help, because that's a young core. It's a bench situation. They can mix these guys in to split Rondo, Wade, and Butler up a bit. But it's relying a lot on those guys, I think.
All right, defending champs, Cleveland Cavaliers, over-under is 57. They also won 57 last year. Where do you have them?
I've got them just under. Just under. I think that the Celtics got better there. I don't think the Cavs are going to be overly concerned about their win total this season after winning it last year. It's definitely not a let's go and smash the under or anything like that. I think I've got them at 56, so they're not too far away from that. But I think they lost. Well, I know they lost. Look, Timofey Mozgov wasn't great last season, but he's better than Chris Anderson. So you replace those minutes. That's a downgrade in that situation. The backup point guard spot, we don't know exactly what's happening there. Is it going to be Jordan McRae? Is it going to be Kay Felder? And Mo Williams, again, struggled last season. Matthew Dellavedova is gone. So there's a bit of a downgrade there. So I do think that they go under there, but I don't think they're going to be too bothered by it.
Yeah, I think they're under too, and it's for the simple reason that I think LeBron got his championship, and he has every reason in the world to cruise through the regular season, take some time off, just make sure he's healthy for the postseason now. And I think it will be silly to play it any other way. Yeah, Dellavedova gone, Mozgov gone. People joke about the contract that Mozgov got in Los Angeles, and I don't think it was a good contract, but he helped them more than Chris Anderson will this year. So yeah, I've got him barely under. I've got him at 55. So I think they're going to be the number one seed in the East. Just 57 is really high, because remember, if you take the over, you're not picking 57. You're picking them to win 58. And this Cavaliers team, as comprised with LeBron and Kyrie and Love, has never won that many. They won 57 last year. They won 53 the year before that. So you're picking them to be the best regular season Cavs team in this era of LeBron Cavs. And, LeBron hasn't won that many games since he did it with the Heat when they won 67 that – or 66 that year. That year they had the crazy win streak. So I'm taking the under. They'll be great. They'll win the East. But LeBron will cruise through. We don't quite know what's going to happen with J.R. Smith yet, although I think they'll sign him. But I feel pretty confident in that, but we don't know what's going to happen yet, or if he's going to be around, or these contract negotiations are getting weird. So I'll stick them at 55, just under, and I think we can leave it at that. Like they're the defending champs, and they'll be great again this year.
Yep, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, so Detroit Pistons, this is a fun one. I think we've agreed on every one of these except for the Bulls so far. Yep. I think we're 5 out of 6 and agreeing. I think we might have a disagreement with the Pistons coming up. Pistons are at 46 wins. They were the 8th seed last year at 44. Where do you have them?
I've got them right on 46. I think.
Oh, no pushes allowed. We should have said that before.
Well, Vegas needs to set it at 45.5, then I can go over. Okay. Well, when I did this projection, I had them come out at 46, and that's right on where Vegas is. So if I had to lean one way, I'd actually lean over. I think they're more likely to go 47 than to go 45. I think that they didn't have splashy free agent signings. Boba Marjanovic, John Lua, Ish Smith, they're not splashy guys. And they upgraded over Anthony Tolliver. They upgraded over Steve Blake. Their core is still young. Like Tobias Harris, you talk about Michael Kidd-Gilchrist still being young. Like Tobias Harris is still 23, and he hasn't had a full off season with his team. He came over midway through the year. So he's going to integrate himself and actually, I think, improve this season. Drummond, he's still young as well. Reggie Jackson's had one full season as a starter. He's still young. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, it's his fourth season. Stanley Johnson, it's his second season. All these guys, I think, all their improvement comes internally and then filling those holes and upgrading that bench unit, which was one of the worst bench units in the league last season. I think that it has to lead them to be better than what they were last season. And yeah, if you're forcing me, which you are, Fred, you're forcing me to choose something, I'll say over.
I am forcing you to choose something. You can't push on this. The whole point is we gotta get all 30. Come on, don't be a wimp.
All right. Cool. Over.
Well, I guess we're in agreement then, because I'm taking the over too. Like you said, it's all these young guys. I think Drummond's going to be better because he's super young and he's going to improve and he's an outrageous talent. Reggie Jackson, it's going to be his second full year as a starting point guard. Will he be able to kind of get more comfortable? I think Stan's a wonderful coach. They're going to have Tobias Harris for the entire season this time, as opposed to only part of the season. I think this core is really integrating together nicely. I feel pretty comfortable taking the over here. I think they could win close to 50 games. That wouldn't surprise me. Drummond obviously has tremendous defensive potential. He's not a tremendous defender yet. He's a great rebounder, and he'll occasionally – he's not actually a great shot blocker. People think of him as a great shot blocker, but he doesn't block a ton of shots. No. He's got great shot blocking potential because he's a tremendous athlete, and he's long, and he's huge. But he's not – He's not a great shot blocker yet. He's not a great rim protector. You see him dog it sometimes on defense. And even last year, like, there were times where he just kind of stopped calling out defensive signals when he was supposed to be the guy calling it. And his teammates would get a little frustrated with him. You could just tell. I think that's something that just gets better with age, gets better with maturity, gets better with experience. And I think we're going to see him take another leap this year like we did last year, and just to becoming one of the best centers in the league. He's already one of the best centers in the league, but making a trek even further than that, I think they're going to be over 46. They were 44 last year. I think this team is going to be a lot better. I can't say the same, although I think this might be a disagreement, because I can't say the same for the Indiana Pacers, whose win total is at, their over-under is at 45. They won 45 last year, number 7 seed in the East. I'm taking the under 45, even after all their moves, which are supposed upgrades this summer. I'm taking the under 45. What say you?
Well, you put me in a tough spot here again, Fred, because I did have them exactly at that line. But
no, you got to do it.
Unlike the Pistons, I am going under as well. They made moves. I don't necessarily think it made them a huge amount better. I think the point guard downgrade is significant. I think the Al Jefferson Jan Mahinmi swap is not ideal. The coaching swap is a downgrade as well. Yeah, Thad Young is a positive addition to what they do, definitely. And he comes in and replaces, you know, obviously Turner moves into Mahinmi's role. Young moves into the role that was occupied by Turner and CJ Miles last season. That's a bit of an upgrade, but the point guard downgrade, I think, is significant. You know, a lot of people will think that Teague is better than George Hill. I don't believe that, especially with this team and this system. And the coaching issue is a real concern for me, moving from Vogel to Nate McMillan. Yeah, there's continuity there for McMillan working with the team, but I just still don't think he's as good a coach as what they had. And I think that they're going to go in overrated this season. I think a lot of people will be looking at the over on this one and thinking, oh, yeah, look at them. I think they can be the 2 seed, which I've heard numerous people mention, and I can't see that happening.
I'm so excited that you also think that George Hill is the superior player to Jeff Teague, because that is not sentiment around people who watch basketball. Like, people think that Jeff Teague is the better player. Jeff Teague is a better facilitator than George Hill. Jeff Teague is better when he puts the ball on the ground, probably going to the rim. But George Hill is better at pretty much everything else, I think. He's a better shooter. He runs an offense a little more reliably. He's a better passer within the offense, though he doesn't really facilitate and get assists and stuff like that. He's basically better at every type of defensive thing that you can do. He's a really, really good defensive point guard. George Hill is really good, and he's going to help Utah a ton this year. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, how many plus defenders are on the Pacers? Like, how many defenders?
That's it.
Really? Like, that's it. That's all. Like, they were the number 3 defense in the league last year. That's how they got to 45 wins. I don't think they're going to be top 10 this year. Like, maybe they're top 10 because Paul George is really good, but there's no way they're getting the 3. Miles Turner is not a really, really good defender right now. Again, he's another guy with great defensive potential, but he's young. Like, how many second-year players are really good defenders? They can be flashy defenders and get great blocks like Turner does, and like pin LeBron's layups up against the backboard like Turner did once last year. And I think Miles Turner is going to be a really good player. But right now he's still learning how to play team defense, how to guard pick and rolls, how to rotate. Like, he's still in his learning stages. He only played 1 year in college. He's still super young. He's like 20, 21 years old. And he's still learning how to play team defense. And that's something that you need from your guy who's going to be your center. And Al Jefferson is not going to come in and play that role either. So I don't know who the rim protector is who's going to play Mahimi's role. Mahinmi was a huge reason for why they were so high defensively last year. They were really good defensively, and Mahinmi had easily the best year of his career. He had a wonderful defensive season. George Hill is gone, who was a major part of that defense as well. I don't see how they're going to replicate their defense. I see them finishing somewhere in the middle of the league in defense, and the offense, I think, will be average-ish as well. I still think they're going to contend for a playoff spot, but I don't think 45 wins is where they're going to end up.
No, I agree with you. I go, I think that they're under. Well, they could get to 45, but I think the under is the definite way to go there. The offense, you say Jeff Teague comes across and people look at it, oh, yeah, he was an all-star, he did all this, but he comes across and he's potentially going to be the third ball handling option. Like Paul George handles the ball the whole time, and then when he doesn't, Monte Ellis handles the ball, and George Hill was fine in that role because he could spot up and he was a good shooter. Yeah, Teague shot really high 3-point percentage last season, but every other year of his career he never got near that, and it didn't. His shot is fluky, it's inconsistent, and I'm not sure how he's going to go having the ball out of his hands as much as what he will in Indiana. It's definitely a different situation, and McMillan has spoken about, yeah, we're not going to run it through Ellis as much, which I think is a great decision, but I'm not sure if Monte Ellis is on board with that. You've got to be able to get through to him and go, Monte, don't take as many shots, don't dribble the ball around as often, and that's something that he's literally never done really throughout his career. He has reduced his shot attempts, but he still has the ball in his hand, and he's still passing the ball and facilitating, and he can be a bit of a disaster defensively too. So I don't like what Indiana has done, and I don't like how it projects for them this upcoming season.
Next up, the team that dropped off more than any other team in the league, according to these lines. The Miami Heat won 48 games last year. Their over-under is 12.5 games below that. I believe that's the lowest, that's the biggest drop off from last year's wins total to this year over-under win total of any team. The Spurs, I know, were 12 wins below. They went from 67. Their over-under is 55. The Heat are at 35.5 wins. That's a major, major drop-off from the team that was the number three seed last year. And I still have the under just barely. But I had them at 35. So it's kind of it's not something that I would, make one of my five bets on. But I had them at 35. I think Dragic is going to have a really good year. I think he's going to have a bounce-back year. I didn't see him working great next to Dwayne Wade. He's a guy who works really well when he can dribble a lot. Like when we saw him in Phoenix that year, he made third team all league. He dribbled a lot and he was fantastic. And that's something that he's really good at. There's a weird guard rotation on this team. Josh Richardson is hurt to start at the beginning of the year, but they're hoping that he won't miss too many games. But you got Richardson, you got Tyler Johnson, you got Deion Waiters. I think Justice Winslow is going to improve, but he still needs to basically develop a shot in order to play on the wing, although I do think that he's going to play a decent amount of power forward there. It's just clearly a weirdly comprised team. It's obviously a transition year. It almost looks like a makeshift roster. We now know Chris Bosh isn't going to be playing at all. It's going to be tough for them to get into the playoff picture this year. I think this is going to be the worst Miami team that we've seen since before LeBron came there.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. I've got them at the under as well. I've got them at 34 wins. Look, you lose Bosch, you lose Wade, you lose Deng, you lose Joe Johnson. It's not easy to replace those guys, and you replace them with Deion Waiters, you replace them with Derek Williams, you replace them with James Johnson. I'm sure there's someone else I'm missing.
Wayne Ellington.
Well, there you go. Willie Reed. Like these are guys that they're not bumping you up 15 wins. They're not doing any of this stuff. Who's starting at power forward? Josh McRoberts has broken his foot, and we don't know when he's going to be ready to go. Like, there's just nothing Hassan Whiteside's there. Goran Dragic is there. They're going to have to carry a lot, but you're relying on Justice Winslow to take a significant step forward offensively, and I'm not sure he's ready to do that. Josh Richardson shot 52% from three after the All-Star break last season. Seems unlikely he'll do that again, and he's got that knee issue. We know what Deion Waiters is, and if he's in a situation where he's going to be relied upon to be the man, that has never really gone well for him or his teams in the past. So, yeah, to me, this is an under, and I can't see them getting into the playoffs.
Deion Waiters will struggle to win MVP if this team doesn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, look, that is definitely his goal. I've got no doubt that's going to be his goal for this season. But yeah, I reckon. Yeah, what they always say, Fred, you need to win 50 plus games to be in the MVP discussion. So anyone who's thinking to go take a stab at Waiters for the MVP, I reckon just save your money and hit the under instead.
Milwaukee Bucks, 36 last year, really really big hit to them. Chris Middleton got hurt. He's out for a while with a hamstring injury. He's going to miss, at least in a best case scenario, he's going to miss a huge chunk of the season. 33 wins last year in a year when a lot of people thought that they were going to make a leap upon being a surprise playoff team the previous season. They, you know, their roster changed midseason a couple years ago when they traded Brandon Knight and got Michael Carter Williams, and everything kind of fell off after that and continued into last year when they almost lost 50. What do you think?
Well, before the Middleton injury happened, I thought they were ready to take a step forward. I didn't think that'd be as bad as last season. Delva Dover, you know, for as much as people think that it's ridiculous that he got a $48 million contract, he was an upgrade and fit perfectly what they wanted to do. Giannis Antetokounmpo had a full off-season working as the primary ball handler as well, so that was something that would work in their favor. But replacing Chris Middleton with Rashard Vaughn, I can't think of any way in any situation, any possible way that works out well. Rashard Vaughn was historically bad last season. He was equally bad in summer league. He just has been really bad, and I don't see even how he replaces 15% of what Middleton brought. I think this is an under here. I cannot see how this team works. Middleton was, but you know, you look at Giannis and he's great for what he does, but Middleton was their most important player with his perimeter defense, his ball handling, but most importantly, his ability to create offense and to hit threes. He's their only consistent three-point shooter. Yeah, look, Dellavedova hit 40%, but we don't know if that was because he's played with LeBron in those second units and just had a million open shots and hit them that way. No, Jabari can't shoot threes. Giannis can't shoot threes. Yeah, Miles Plumlee can't shoot threes. Rashard Vaughn allegedly can shoot threes, but we have zero evidence to see that that's actually the case. Middleton's their most important player. He's gone. They cannot hit this over.
Middleton was not just their most important player. He's their best player. Like, yep. I know Giannis has the best potential, and maybe this is the year where Giannis makes a jump over Middleton. And he was really good last year. He had a really good season, especially at the end of the year when he was just playing first-string facilitator, and he was really playing point guard those final 20-ish games of the year, and he was wonderful with his size and the way that he creates and rebounds and gets out in the break and finishes around the rim. I mean, he doesn't shoot yet, but he's a really good player, and I'm not demeaning that, but people don't realize how good Chris Middleton is. He does everything. He's their most important defender. The reason when they were winning, when they were getting up into a middle playoff seed a couple of years ago before they fell off after trading Brandon Knight, the reason that they were doing that and part of the reason they made the Michael Carter Williams trade was because he's another long, lanky defender who can switch onto guys, and that's what Middleton is, and that's what Giannis is, that's what John Henson is. And then they went out last offseason, they signed Greg Monroe. That doesn't work with their defense, and he's another guy who doesn't step away from the rim. You know, Jabari Parker, another guy who doesn't shoot threes and also was not one of those switchy defenders. And they've kind of gotten away from that, even after going all in on that with Michael Carter-Williams, which didn't work. It just didn't – that trade did not work. I don't see how they're going to recover that with Middleton gone. I mean, their hope to get over 36 wins is Giannis makes the leap. Like, he becomes a star player, which is possible, but I think it's going to happen. I also think we're probably a year or two away from him, like, really absolutely breaking out and becoming one of those guys who can carry you to 40 wins to, you know, just completely on his own. And I do think he'll get there, but I think we're probably a year or two away from there after just seeing what he did last year. I think he's got to learn a little bit more as a facilitator, and that's fine because he's outrageously young still. If he gets there another 2 years, he's still going to get there before he's 25 years old, which is an amazing development. I just don't think this is the year it happens.
Completely agree with you, Fred.
The Knicks, my hometown team. The New York Knicks. 42 wins is their over-under. They won 32 last year. To me, the Knicks have the largest win range in the league. Like, the Knicks could win 30, and I wouldn't be surprised. And the Knicks could win 48, and I also wouldn't be surprised. They have about 19 guys on the team who could reasonably get injured. I mean, Carmelo Anthony historically has knee issues. Derrick Rose, we know his history with knees and whatever else. Joakim Noah is hurt a lot. He's got the plantar fasciitis in his history. He was hurt a lot of last year, hurt a lot a couple years ago. When he's not injured, he's played hurt a lot. A lot of that, you know, is due to just racking up a ton of minutes early in his career. who else is there? You know, Kristaps Porzingis is incredibly skinny and got knocked around a lot last year and could reasonably go down. Brandon Jennings is coming off an Achilles. I mean, there are just a ton of guys here. I mean, there is a scenario in which on certain nights, like Courtney Lee could be their best or second best player. And Courtney Lee was a really good signing. And I thought they got him for really good value. They got him for like 50 over 4 years, which I thought was great value in this market. I mean, he's a really good defender and he shoots threes and he's great without the ball. And he's a really good player, Courtney Lee. I thought that was a wonderful defender or a wonderful signing. But if Courtney Lee is your second best player at any point, then you've got a problem. If he's your fifth best player, their fourth best player, you're in great shape. But this team is just, it's weirdly comprised. I didn't like the Robin Lopez trade for Derrick Rose. I thought Robin Lopez was tremendously valuable on the contract that they had him at. And they gave him up for a guy who is going to be a free agent next year and either is overpaid for 1 year and then leaves and is, you know, a subpar starting point guard, or is a guy who has his recovery year and then you have to sign him to a max contract. So you're losing great value in Robin Lopez in a market that had just spiked. I wasn't a fan of really most of the things they did this offseason, even though I do think they're going to be better. All of that being said, I am going to take the over barely by one win, just because I think even though Rose is not close to MVP Rose anymore, he's better than what they had at point guard last year. They forced the fewest turnovers of any team in the history of the league last year. In the history of the league, they forced fewer turnovers than anyone ever. And that's going to be improved upon just because even if they're the second worst turnover forcing team ever, they're still better than they were last year. This is a team I think Melo actually had a really strong year last year. I think we'll build on that. I think Porzingis will improve. I really hope they don't phase him out with all these new guys. I'm going to take the over barely. I think they're going to sneak into the playoffs as long as they stay healthy. I have no idea if they're going to stay healthy.
Well, one thing we know about Derrick Rose is he's at least getting in his penitentiary workouts, as he mentioned. So that's good for him when he has to spend some time in jail.
What a weird quote. That was such a weird quote.
He should never, ever, 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 ever speak to the media, but it's unavoidable. And it's you're going to get some weird stuff that comes. And some of the stuff gets twisted when he says it, but he should never speak. I don't think he's got an ability to really say the right thing at any time, and it's a concern. The whole trial is a concern. We don't want to get really into that, but I've got them at the under, Fred. There's just too many negative variables with this team. Like Joakim Noah, it's a horrible contract. We don't know what he's going to be like this season. Yeah, Melo, you talked about his injury. Rose, we don't even know how much he's going to be here, not even including injury. We don't know how he's going to have to be at the trial. Is he going to go be put in jail? That's a possibility. Is the league going to suspend him? We don't know any of these. He might not be there. And then in a backup point guard situation, it's Brandon Jennings who's coming off an Achilles injury. And behind him, there's nobody. There's no point guard. Chasen Randle, who's their other point guard there? It's an upgrade over last season. Yeah, sure. But at least Jerry and Grant and Jose Calderon could have been there. Rose may not be there. This, to me, is... it's not a good situation. Look, you said you wouldn't be surprised if they won 48. I would be stunned if they won 48. I think they've misused, or not misused, but I think they'd be much better playing Melo at the 4, Porzingis at the 5, and that's the way, you know, to get wins, not pushing, not trying to marginalize Kristaps and get him out of playing the 5 with Noah there. I do not like that move at all. Melo, as he gets older, is better off sliding up a position. We hear Rose getting confused at the triangle at the moment. That's an issue that is already, you know, concerns, and Phil getting angry at players in camp. Under.
I do agree with you that they would be better off with Kristaps at the 5 and Melo at the 4. And I do think that's the right decision long term. And I do think that the Noah contract was a massive overpay. And all of that said, and like I said, my prediction is not at them at 48. It's at 43. But yep. Noah, there is a conceivable scenario in which Noah is better than he was last year. And there's a conceivable scenario that Derrick Rose is better than he was all of last year, because he was actually pretty decent after the All-Star break. And maybe he caught something that he can continue into this year. You know, he doesn't have to be MVP Derrick Rose just to be better than he was last year. You know, Melo can be a little healthier than he was last year. Kristaps can take a leap, and I think if all of those things happen, then they're up to something like in the high 40s. But I don't think all of those things will happen. There's one thing that I do want to correct you on, something that you said, because I do think we need to at least get the facts right. That Derrick Rose is not going to be Derrick Rose. It's a civil suit with Derrick Rose. So,
but isn't there an open criminal case in LA as well?
They're investigating.
Okay.
They're investigating, so there's not actually an open criminal case, and that would take a while to go down. So and that's not something that is being pursued and is reportedly being they're reportedly investigating. But for now, it's a $21.5 million civil suit, in which if he loses, he pays off, you know, whatever the judge rules. Yep. So that's something he'll now how much time he misses because of the trial or personal stuff or taking personal time and that kind of stuff is something else to wonder. But let's talk about the Magic, which is I think a bleak situation for other reasons. 37 wins is their over under. They won 35 last year. I loved hiring Vogel. I thought that was a great move. They're gonna play. At some point this year, they're going to play what may end up being, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, they're going to play what may end up being my favorite lineup in the NBA, which is going to be complete and utter chaos, which is going to be Elfrid Payton, Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon, Bismack Biyombo, and Serge Ibaka. And no one is going to score against that lineup, and they are also not going to score a point. And it's going to be absolutely wonderful, and I can't wait to see it happen. There's going to be no shooting, and there's going to be from them, and there's going to be no scoring on the other end. And it's going to be Frank Vogel coaching that lineup, so you know they're going to be good defensively, because I think Vogel's a really good coach. All that said, I'm taking the under. I don't see how the pieces fit. You know, they signed Jeff Green to the 1-year deal. They got Biyombo. They traded for Ibaka. They got rid of Oladipo. They lost Ilyasova. They lost Tobias Harris midseason last year. They lost Brandon Jennings. I don't see how the pieces fit. And because of that, I'm putting them in the mid 30s again. They won 35 last year. I'm giving them 35 again, and that gives them the under.
I think that now I've got them at 37, which again is right on the over-under, but I definitely lean the under on that sense. Their moves were all made to get themselves in the playoffs, and I do not see how that's going to happen. Their defense is going to be really good. We know what Vogel can do as a defensive coach. Biyombo is a really good defender. Ibaka is a good defender. Yeah, but offense, look, you can defend as much as you want, but you have to at least score something on the other end, and that's going to be the real concern. If Fournier is a really good offensive contributor, he's an efficient scorer, he's a good shooter, but it's him, and there's no one else, really. Aaron Gordon is not a plus offensive player, especially when you're playing him at the three. Biyombo is the worst offensive player in the NBA, potentially. And that's maybe hyperbolic, but it's not far off. He's horrible. He it looks like his hands are painted on at times. He's not quite Festus Ezeli bad in that sense, but can't catch a ball. He can't shoot. You don't have to pay any attention to him. Serge Ibaka has been declining significantly over the last couple of seasons, and a lot of people, he's going to bounce back, you know, it's going to be his team. I don't necessarily think he's physically capable of a huge bounce back to what we saw from 2011 Serge Ibaka. I don't think that he's able to get back to that level. Elfrid Payton can't shoot. It's definitely going to be interesting to watch, Fred. I want to watch it to see how it works out, but if the Magic fans are looking for basketball in May, I reckon they'll be doing that by watching other teams on TV.
That was a cruel dig at the end.
just being honest.
They're going to be one of the most fun teams in the league to watch, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Elfrid Payton is fun. Aaron Gordon's obviously insanely fun. They'll be really good defensively. I think for people who like watching defense, they'll be really good. Biyombo's fun to watch. Ibaka, while he's not quite the player he used to be, he's still, you know, athletic and still a really good defender. You know, Fournier has a lot of funky moves and has become a really solid shooting guard. I'm, you know, Jeff Green's not very fun, but I I wonder how Vogel's going to manage his rotations. Like, I wonder how he's going to try to make these pieces fit, because Frank Vogel is smarter than both of us, and he's going to come closer to finding a way to make these pieces fit than anything we can figure out by, like, spitballing this roster. But I don't know if he's going to be – I don't know if anyone can exactly figure out how to do this. Like, it's going to be weird. I'm not quite sure how it's going to work. But I am very excited to watch them. I'll be watching them a lot this year. I think they're going to be a really fun team to watch. Speaking of fun and young, next team we got three teams left. So let's power through them. We got the 76ers. Now, the 76ers are a little more complicated than the other lines. The line for the Sixers was 27.5 wins, but it closed down on Saturday and is still closed down. We're recording this Sunday afternoon, and the line for the Sixers closed down Sunday when it was announced that Ben Simmons had broken his foot. Same injury as Cameron Payne. He fractured the fifth metatarsal in his right foot. The exact same injury that Cameron Payne had, except he's going to be out for 3 months, the 76ers said. And so because of that, there's no line and no sports book. It's not anywhere. I couldn't find an updated one after the Simmons injury. So if it was 27.5 with Simmons, I'm setting him for us at 22. Or you know what? I'm going to make it 22.5. So I don't see you push. I'm setting it at 22.5. They had a grand total of 10 wins last year. Take your over under 22.5.
Yeah, you didn't need to get that half on. I still would have gone under on this one. It's a significant loss here. Dario Saric will probably step into that role, but it's still a development season, despite what the Colangelos may want you to think. Oh, we're all about winning. Cool. Yeah, Joel Embiid is not going to play back-to-backs from what we hear at the moment. That's 17 games that he's going to be out. We don't know what's happening at the center position. There's weird fits. Are they going to try and push Noel and Okafor into Simmons' power forward minutes as well? Like, that didn't work that well last season, especially with Okafor at that position. Yeah, they've definitely improved on last season, like adding Saric and adding Embiid and adding Simmons in the back half of the season is going to help. But, yeah, I can't see them going over 22 wins. It's just there's just too much to sort of develop, too many guys. Too many new guys in new situations, people who aren't used to the NBA, working with each other, weird rotations, lack of shooting. Improved, but, I can't see them. And that 27 or what it was before seemed high in itself. I would have been hitting the under on that anyway, even if Simmons was playing the whole season. I can't see them taking that sort of a leap forward. And even now, an extra 10 wins on last season while missing who could potentially be your best player this season for at least half of the year. It's going to be hard to navigate for Brett Brown.
I will preface this by giving a little bit of hope to if there are any 76ers fans listening to this. I will preface this by saying I think the Sixers are going to be the only team in the league this year to double their win total from last year.
I've got them at 21, so I'm with you.
I think they will double their win total from last year. I also am taking the under, though. Noel's already talking out about how he doesn't understand how they're going to make three centers work. Embiid is going to miss a lot of games. I hope he's great. I really hope he's great. But he's going to miss a lot of games just for precautionary reasons. Like, even if he never actually gets injured, they're going to play him limited minutes, and they're going to make sure he doesn't miss games because they can't afford to lose him once again. And I cannot wait to see him play. I've been waiting for years for this now.
It's so exciting.
I cannot wait. And I'm going to see his first NBA game ever. I'm going to be there because
Thunder.
They open up against the Thunder on October 26th. So I am incredibly excited that I get to be at his first NBA game and get to see him play in person, because I've never gotten to see him play in person, and that will be a fun experience. But especially, that whole game is going to be great. But I'm taking the under. This team just – they've got young players that I like, but for all the talk about how they're transferring to a winning attitude now, and Jared Bayless doesn't put you over the top. He's a nice player, but he doesn't put you over the top. Saric, I think, is going to be a good player, but again, young, developing. They're not there. And I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the league this year, which will be a nice improvement. I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the league. I think we're going to see the Nets worse than them. And maybe another one. But they're going to be a lot closer to the worst than they will to the best. And I'm taking that under. The Raptors, they're up next. The Raptors, number two seed, Eastern Conference Finals last year, 56 wins. Their over-under is 50. I have their under. They lost Biombo. Carroll's going to be healthy this year. But I honestly thought they outplayed their talent level a little bit last year. I have this theory. They have a very efficient offense. They have a really efficient offense. It's also very isolation heavy. And I have this feeling that this is going to be the year where, I mean, look, Lowry is a wonderful player. I mean, he's a great point guard. He's great. And I think Valanciunas is going to get better because we kind of saw him start to develop toward the end of last year. But I have this theory that the rest of the league is going to start to figure out their schemes a little bit more this season. And I think they're going to be a very good team. I think they're going to win like 47, 48 games, which is basically where they were the couple of years preceding that 56-win season last year. But that would give them the under. I think the rest of the league is going to start to figure out their shtick a little bit offensively finally after all these years of them doing it.
It looked like they sort of figured them out a bit in the playoffs in that sense. I think they do drop off from last season, but I don't think they dropped six games. I've got them at over. I've got them at 53. Biombo is a loss for them defensively, but he also, again, I mentioned he's horrible offensively, so you're going to get a bit more offensive production. Hopefully Valanciunas takes, three or so of those minutes. Yeah, Salinger comes in. Is he an upgrade over what they had at power forward last season? Maybe. Yeah, he could be. We don't exactly know. Yeah, Pascal Siakam has looked really good so far, but how much is he going to get into the rotation? Yeah, Jakob Poeltl, he's not going to see a huge amount of minutes there. Damari Carroll playing the full season, I think, really, really does, especially if he gets back to being at his best, which he was in Atlanta, which I'm not sure that he can actually do, but if he does, I think that's significant for them. I see them dropping off, but I don't think that they're going to drop all the way down to 50, especially if Casey shows some common sense. And that hasn't been necessarily something that's been really, huge for him over the course of his coaching career. If he transitions a little bit away from this isolation stuff and gives Valanciunas more touches in the post, we saw that could work really efficiently in the playoffs. He needs to just, it doesn't have to be just, okay, all of a sudden Valanciunas is our number one option. That's never going to happen. It just needs to be a slight transition, a couple of extra touches, a half or something like that, just to get it out of the hands of DeRozan and Lowry, especially on nights when they're struggling, when you can dump it in and get a guy like Valanciunas, who's tremendous when he's close to the basket. And if you start using it that way, and if DeRozan and Lowry realize that that can be something that actually helps them in the long term, I think that they can make up for some of the losses that they did suffer. And so Carroll coming back means that I reckon they should beat 50 to me.
We've been talking for a long time.
We have.
Ready to close this out?
Let's go.
We got the Wizards, the Washington former Bullets Wizards. 41 wins last year. Disappointing season for them, although they turned it on a little bit of late, but definitely a disappointing season. They signed Jan Mahimi. I think the defense is going to be good. They're at 42.5 wins. I'm taking the over. I think they're going to be a good defensive team this year. I think John Wall is a really good defender. I think Mahimi had a wonderful year. I think Porter has good defensive potential. I think Scott Brooks, for all the crap he got in Oklahoma City, Scott Brooks always had good defenses. The Thunder were always well-schemed defensively. They always took advantage of their personnel defensively. They always played insanely hard defensively, which is something that Scott Brooks' teams always have in common. Scott Brooks always... Look, Scott Brooks, Kendrick Perkins talked about this a little bit. I should say he alluded to it a little bit when he went on Woj's podcast this week, when he talked about the work ethic that the Thunder had when he was first traded here. And that's set, I mean, that's set by the whole organization. That comes from ownership, from Presti, but he also comes from Scott Brooks. And that's something that I think Scott Brooks will be able to instill in Washington, a different type of culture, which is one of the most important things that a coach can do, just from a work ethic perspective. And I think, for all the things we hear about Wall and Beal not getting along, we've never really seen that on the court. I think they have decent enough chemistry on the court when Beal has managed to stay healthy. I don't think they're going to be a great team or anything, but I feel pretty comfortable taking the over here. I think they're going to be one of the better defensive teams in the Eastern Conference.
I agree with you completely about Brooks. It's a huge upgrade over Whitman to me. The Wizards did underachieve last season. And when I look at my projection here, I've got them at 42, so it's almost right on. It's a really soft under. I'm not happy with it. I think I'd prefer to give them an extra win and take one off the Bulls and be happier in that sense, but that's not what I did when I did the initial projection. So I'll stick with what I've got, saying a soft under, but I definitely wouldn't be putting money on it. I think that they do improve. I am really worried about John Wall's knees, though, at this point. You know, two off-season knee surgeries is a concern. Let's see how he looks in preseason. Let's see if he actually plays in these first preseason games. That'll give us some more indication. Brad Beal, is he going to be on a minutes restriction all season? He probably should have been last season, but Whitman, as soon as they gave Beal his back, okay, cool, 42 minutes, Brad, don't worry, I know your leg's broken, cool, just play as many minutes as you can possibly play. That didn't work out. They won't be doing that this season, but they could limit him down to 30 minutes. I'm really excited about Tomas Satoransky on this team. He is one of the more exciting
athlete.
Players to me.
Unbelievable.
He's
athlete.
A freak. Did you see that video that Candace Buckner put out across the weekend?
Yes, Candace Buckner, fellow Mizzou grad, Candace Buckner.
He's just – I know he's European. I know he's white, but he is legit. It was a massive dunk. They're having like some sort of dunk contest in camp, and he threw down something huge. And he's a three-point shooter. He's a 6'7" point guard. He's a solid defender. He scores – really excited to see him in this team, and he's in my top five players to watch this season. You know, coming into the league, he's in there. I've been waiting for him to come over for a couple of seasons, and he's enough of a reason for me to watch the Wizards this year. Again, soft under, but not. Yeah, I probably want to revise that, I reckon.
He is an amazing in-game dunker too. Like, he has had some amazing dunks on fast breaks over the last year or two playing in games. He is great, Josh. We're done with the East. Anything to plug before we go?
No, just listen to Locked On Fantasy Basketball, and that's all you should be listening to if you're playing fantasy basketball. I reckon I'll have everything that you want covered there.
All right, and it's a really good podcast. Josh, as you can probably tell now, knows the league really well. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday, as is Josh. That's the Locked On model. Tomorrow is going to be Over Under Podcast again. I know we went pretty long today, but there are a lot of NBA teams. I feel like we didn't even talk about each team that much. I feel like we could have gone way longer on every team. Like, Josh did his preseason previews and went like a whole, like, we went like an hour just talking about the Thunder on the preseason preview podcast. So so I feel like we could have gone like 30 hours on this one. Or I should say 15, because we did 15. But tomorrow is going to be the Western Conference. Yes, that means we're going to be doing the Thunder along with 14 other teams tomorrow. Remember, you got the game this afternoon. If you're listening to it if you're listening to this Monday morning or early in the morning, the Thunder play at 1:30 against Real Madrid on Monday evening, and that's in Spain. And then or Monday afternoon, evening in Spain, and then on Wednesday they've got Barcelona. So Thunder are doing their Spain trip. We're doing our over-under trip. You can head on to iTunes, and you can subscribe to Locked On Thunder if you're feeling like it. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter, @FredKatz. And Josh, what's your handle again?
It's @RedRock_Beeble.
All right. And log on to normantranscript.com to find all of your Thunder needs there. And podcasts are up there. Thunder coverage is up there. Gamers, previews of games, all that stuff. Now that we actually have games going on, we can actually have some game coverage. And you can check out Thunder Road. That's my blog on the site to follow the team there. Just go to the sports tab, wait for the drop-down menu, click on Thunder Road on the website. That's going to do it for today. We're back on Tuesday for more Thunder and Over-Under talk. Until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.